ओम मंगलम गुरुदेवाय देव्यै मत्रिक्ष मंगलम मंगलम भक्ता वृंदेभ्यो सर्वलोकाय मंगलम ओम स्थापकाय च धर्मस्य सर्वधर्मस्वरूपिणे अवतार वरिष्ठाय रामकृष्णाय ते नमः। ओम सारशिव समारंभम शंकराचार्य मध्यमम अश्वर आचार्य प्रायंतम वंदे गुरुम परम परम श्रीमात्रे नमः। So we're continuing our readings from the Devi Mahatmyam, the Chandi. And yesterday we finished chapter 5, which had the beautiful Yadevi Sarvabhuteshu verses. Probably the most popular section, the most well-known section. So, who are the demons that have come up? Shumba and Nishumba, the main two demons have come up, right? And kicked Indra off his throne again, and all the gods are wandering helpless. And we mentioned Shumba and Nishumba are given the interpretation by the yogis, a very deep interpretation. That of Shumba is that of this conceit, this inflated sense of importance, I guess is the way you define this conceit, right? Of centeredness. And Nishumba is the opposite of that. Right, it is a feeling of lack and of emptiness of what did we say? It was self-loathing, you could say, instead of self-importance. Right, Shumba and Nishumba. This is taken as a psychological interpretation, and they have, when they became the kings of the demons, many other important demons that on their own are very formidable themselves, Raktabija, Dumnalochan, Chandamunda. These various demons, they have also come and to say, we want to serve the king, we want to be included, right? You have to become the friend of the new ruler and serve that new ruler. Whoever the ruler is, they have to serve, right? And actually it shows you that even when Indra is ruler, that even these demons have their place. In the lower parts of the personality, we also have, there's anger, there's lust, there's greed, all these things, there's some confusion. But as long as Indra is in control, they're fine. Right? But if Shumba and Nishumba are in control, right, and they become the servants of Shumba and Nishumba, then you're there. Then there's no hope. They pollute everything. And so this is the scene. So the gods, they remembered from their last time that something like this happened when Mahishasura took over. Simply remembering the Divine Mother, their problems were destroyed. So they started remembering, you are, O Mother, you exist everywhere, and you exist here in me as consciousness. And every form of, every change of, every transmutation of consciousness. You're my hunger, my delusion, my ignorance, my thirst, my peacefulness, my memory, my agitation, everything. You're the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful, everything, right? And Ma appeared, we know that beautiful scene. She appeared as they were in the Himalayas chanting this hymn or meditating on the imminence of the Divine Mother. Eminence and imminence of the Divine Mother. She came as Parvati. And just sat there on the bank of the Ganga, bathing the Ganga. We read this yesterday, and she asks, "Who's being praised here? Who are you? What are you doing? Who are you praying to?" Right? And then we saw something came out of her, right? And came out another form, came out of Parvati, and said, "It is me." Right? You know, so that from within the body, Parvati means is taken symbolically to be the physical body, the daughter of the mountain. Another Shakti came out. Right, so the yogis, it doesn't take much to think that this is Kundalini, right? And glorious, and she immediately became a little dark, right? Very focused. We saw that she went after, because she didn't come for any reason. She came for a specific reason, to destroy or to purify or eliminate Shumba and Nishumba and his host of demons, right? So as soon as she saw there, the two main servants of Shumba and Nishumba. Those were we met last night. Chanda and Munda, right? They, we mentioned that the tantric auxiliary hymns of the Chandi themselves give the meaning. Chanda means anger, Chanda means lust, desire, and Munda means anger, right? This is a general meaning that the texts themselves give, the tantras give, and so desire is constantly searching how to serve the ego, right? So he sees this beautiful goddess. So beautiful. So he immediately thinks, oh, she should immediately be enjoyed by Shumba or Nishumba. So they go to Shumba and Nishumba and says, there's a beautiful woman there. You've already stolen everything else. So you should steal her and own her and possess her. So he thinks this is just catching up a few things. He said, yes, this is a very good idea. So he sends his messenger, Sugriva. Right, you go and you tell her. You speak in loving, beautiful, romantic words and convince her to come to me. Right? So he goes to the goddess and he says, you are beautiful, you are a gem among women, right? You are no doubt the most worthy possession, right? You should immediately go to Shumba or his brother Nishumba. And then he speaks in Shumba's words. He says, I am, you should come to me because, remember this term, I am the supreme enjoyer. Since I am the enjoyer, you should also be enjoyed by me. So come. So then she says something very wonderful. She says, it's true, Shumba is great, right? We ended it last night. Shumba is great and Nishumba heroic, no doubt, right? Worthy husbands. But I've taken a vow in my youth, a foolish vow, that I will not marry anybody except I can only marry the person who defeats me in battle. Defeating me, I shall be theirs, right? So this is interesting. Actually, I'm making some connections with today's puja we did today. And so he goes, now, was that beautiful? That don't be, what is that one line? Don't be haughty, yeah. Right? Then you're misbehaved, you're now becoming, this is not appropriate to speak. Who can stand against Shumba? How can anybody defeat Shumba? Or even his brother Nishumba? Indra and the gods, they themselves give him everything that they have, scared of him, right? So how can you, a mere woman, stand against him? This is where we left it. And she says, no, it's true. Give my message to him and let him do what he wants, right? So this is where we left off. And so this chapter 6 starts, there's a meditation mantra in Padmavati. Your tender body shines like a jewel upon the hood of the Lord of Serpents upon whom you rest. You shine like the sun and your three eyes are brilliant. You hold rosary, goad, skull, and lotus. A shining crescent moon decorates your crown. Ever existing within the gaze of Lord Bhairava, the Lord of Wisdom, upon you, O Mother Padmavati, we meditate. It's interesting, I'm thinking. Before we jump into this, I'm going to tell another story. I've been telling stories from the Devi Bhagavat, right, as to flush out who Shumba and Nishumba were, who Mahishasura were in their previous lives, the stories like that. And in my mind, I'm remembering there's stories about Shumba and Nishumba, but I'm thinking, because today we did, today is Lita Panchami. And some people in this tradition, we on this day, the Panchami of Navaratri, they do a special puja to Lalita. That's why we use one simple Lalita mantra. And today we did a more elaborate, we did Navarna puja, many hour puja for the Sri Chakra. That's above Sri Ramakrishna's picture, the crystal spatik Meru Chakra. To the best of our inability, we tried to do it as carefully as we could, a complicated puja. But in these two chapters, they're going to, Chanda and Munda, lust and anger, take too much, they take control and they have to be dealt with, right? But the story of Lalita also has a story about lust, right? Because it's this is from the Brahmana Purana. Brahmanda Purana or Brahmana Purana? Brahmana Purana, I think. And in that story, Shiva is deep in meditation, right? And this is after Sati had committed Sati, so he was without Shakti, so apparently without Shakti, never without Shakti. He's meditating, and some other demon comes up. Who's the demon that Skanda kills? Kartikeya kills? I'm forgetting just now. Tarakasura, right? In this Tarakasura, in this story, this also in Devi Bhagavat, the story is also told. Tarakasura took advantage of the fact that Shiva was in meditation and Shakti had disappeared, from manifested, right? So everything became inauspicious. So another demon came up, Tarakasura. And he had a boon that only the legitimate son of Shiva could kill him. But Shiva has no wife and he's in the Himalayas meditating. Right, so where is, so he's like, he's also thinking, I'm clear, right? So the gods don't know what to do. They have to get Shiva to come out of his meditation and take another wife, or the same wife in a different form, right? In the story, this is in the story. And so we know this Kamadev, I think it's called Madan, in this in Madana. He comes by the prompting of Lord Brahma, you have to tempt him. And a very beautiful scene in many shastras is there, in Tulsidas's Ramayana, it's the most wonderfully told, right? It's exquisitely told, that story, right? Kamadev, he has to agitate Shiva's mind, right, who's deep in meditation, right? So he uses all of his weapons, right, in his retinue, where he has immediately becomes spring, right, the most romantic season. Everything is most perfect, the most, like that, and he shoots an arrow of pure desire into Shiva's heart, right, to agitate him, right? And Shiva, deep in his meditation, like, what is that? Like some little, that's not his custom, that's not his nature. Some little vibhriti comes and he opens his eyes and he sees Kama in front of him. And so because he's so angry at such a thing, who would dare move my meditation? He opens his third eye and goes, burns him to ashes and goes back to meditation. So it's easy. If yogis who have a little struggle with sloth, is just open your third eye, go and go back to meditation. No problem, right? So that's the way it's told in Devi Bhagavat. But the story is told a little differently in the Brahmana Purana, where Lita Sahasranama and these hymns are found. There, Rati, the wife of Kamdev, which means pleasure and enjoyment, right? She takes the ash of her husband, and not knowing what to do, she's so attached to it, she makes another little man out of the ashes, right? And by her devotion, he comes back to life. Right, by her shakti, by her vrat, she comes back to life. So now, what is he? Kama is not a bad thing. Right, here we have like Shumbha, by the time you get to Chanda and Munda, was pure lust and Mahishasura, that raw thing, that we have to deal with. But actually, Kama is not a bad thing. Kama is what gives all pleasure in life. What brings even devotion to God is Kama. Right, you know, the mantra for Kali is the same mantra for Kamadev. The mantra for Krishna is the same mantra for Kamadev. So kama simply means desire. And at the grossest level, it means pure, physical, selfish lust. The highest level, it's ecstatic devotion. When this gets twisted, that's when this is not satisfied, it becomes this. At satisfied, it becomes the highest union. Right? But Shiva, he's not thinking like this. He's an ascetic. Anything that bothers him, he simply destroys. That's his nature, right? That's his life-denying type of thing, right? And so this Kama is not a bad person, right? Not a bad thing, right? But what he made by burning him, what did he make out of? He made out of his ashes another deity came, who is much, much worse. He's the shadow of Kama. He's the ashes, comes from that rejected and hid and pushed aside, not dealt with, not honored, right? Just rejected like this, it becomes its own thing. Right, if our own desire for God, which is the essence of Kama, right, is completely just rejected, all the like that, what does it become? It becomes, in separation, it becomes lust. Right, if it's not satisfied, it becomes physical lust. Right, so it became, we call him Bandha Sura, right? Because when he came up, all the gods screamed, stop. Right, this is much worse than Kama. Kama's hard to deal with, right? It's a fact. You cannot dismiss Kama's difficulty. He makes everything a little complicated. Everything beautiful and complicated both, right? But Bandhasura becomes horrible. The shadow, the rejected, the ignored part of Kama. He becomes Bandhasura. He comes up and he, within an instant, it doesn't take him much to, there's no war, but he just takes over everything. And none of the gods can fight him, none of the sages, rishis, nobody can do anything against Bandhasura. Right? So now what to do? Shiva's lost in meditation, he's not paying attention, right, what he's done. Right? So they go to the rishis, Brihaspati and the other rishis, and he says, what do you do? So they immediately build a fire pit, they dig a pit, they build, and they start, and they do these mantras, and they begin to do a Devi Puja, Devi Havan. So like we do in our small ways, it's in a very large way. And it says, out of that fire, in beautiful Sri Yantra, Meru Sri Chakra came out of that fire. Right? And a beautiful form of the goddess came up. That's Lalita, Tripura Sundari. Right? Very beautiful. Right? And that's why in the opening verses of Lita Sahasranama, Srimata, Sri Maharajni, that our mother, Maharajni, that's the great empress, Lita Tripura Sundari. Maharajni, Srimata, Sri Maharajni, Srimatsimasaneshwari. She sits upon the lion throne, right? Where? Chidagni Kunda Sambhuta, in the fire pit of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? Out of the fire she comes. Right? That fire is our own fire. This is a symbol of Kundalini, that she comes up, she wakes up, just like here Kaushika came out of Parvati's body in this story, right? Same thing. So this, she comes out of the fire pit, and Devya Karasvati, she does the work of the gods, right? What's the work of the gods? To make everything back to normal, right? Not even to like to destroy evil, because evil's never destroyed. The world of duality is there, right? But bring everything back to a healthy state, right? Devya Karasvati, the gods are on top, the demons below, humans somewhere in between, playing between the two of them. That's called life. That's proper life, right? Right? From there, in that situation, one can transcend this whole thing, right? But when everything's out of balance, there's no chance to do anything. So she when she sees Bandasura and his army, she immediately wants to go. She wants to go to battle, right? Elaborately told in this Purana. But then the gods say it doesn't look proper that a woman goes to battle without an unmarried woman goes to battle, right? This doesn't seem proper, right? He goes, so she what she does? She takes off her garland and just throws it behind her, not even looking. And it happens to fall on Shiva, who's still meditating there the whole time. Right? So she's officially married to Shiva. Right? That's the thing. She's Shiva's, but saying, but how is she married to Shiva? It's not like, she's not subservient to Shiva in this story. Right?
Formality.
It's a formality only, right? There's some deeper thing there. But Shiva is this infinite consciousness. She's a Shakti of consciousness. She's united with it. Right? And then one of my favorite little lines, it says, when Banda saw her, she says, what, a mere woman? Right? She laughs, right, at this audacity. And from that laughter, Ganesh is born. That's one of the stories of Ganesh's birth. It's very nice. And usually we think of Ganesh coming from the dirt of Parvati, like that's okay. But this is the story in Brahmana Purana. So a very elaborate, complicated story. She eventually kills Bandasura with what? Not with, like, Kali, she kills, well, here are all kinds of wonderful weapons she has, swords and bells and clubs and skulls and like this, right? That same goddess, it's not a different goddess, right? But in this story, her weapons, she has a noose, right? And a noose, something like ties something, right? Banda, right? So, and she has a elephant goad that controls, right? These are things, you don't kill things with a noose and a goad, you control them. You guide them, you bind them, you move them, right? So it's different. It's not just whom and destroy, right? It's put everything back. It's control. It's a matter of control, right? Bring everything back to line. And she holds a beautiful. Her bow is made of sugarcane, and the string is made of bees, right? And she also has five flower arrows, just like Kamadev has five senses. The beauty of the and those are her arrows, also through beauty. Through the senses, that's her weapons, right? But she, her being shot by one of these arrows, the same thing as being smashed by Kali's club. It's the same thing, right? One is some. It depends what the same action, according to your state of mind, what you need, it's going to come differently. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it needs to come through force. Sometimes it comes through beauty, right? Through beauty, through charms, through love, through these auspicious qualities. This Saumya qualities, the same demon is killed. Right, so the long story, I'm not going to tell the whole story, it's a different text and a different story, but today's that day, so I'm remembering. So what happens is eventually Banda is killed, Bandasura is killed. And Rati is like, I lost my first husband, who I loved very much, and now I lost my second husband, who was bad, but at least he was my husband. Right, do I have anything? So all she did, she gave a sidelong glance. Right, and Ma can create universes with a sidelong glance, right? She gives a sidelong glance and he comes back to life. Back as Kama, right? Madan is there, Madan is there. Back, and everything is restored, right? Because Kama completely rejected becomes much, much worse. So it's a different, this is a different aspect of the Devi, right? And seeing everything is hard place. But at that point, she also had to kill him. Had to destroy and bring him back to his original source, right? So sometime in our yogic disciplines, and these are important, sadhana and renunciation and discipline, it's all very, very important. And sometime you have to become a little bit strong in your mind, with strong sankalpa, right? Otherwise, maya just takes over. You have to be a little strong. You have to control your senses. You have to smash your own ignorance, right? Mm-hmm. Swami Shivananda said you have to beat yourself with a shoe. Once in a while, you need a good shoe beating, right? Some books, sometimes like that is a good shoe. Sometimes you need a good shoe beating, right? But not so much where you everything gets twisted. That's the point. If it gets twisted, it's going to get worse, right? If you push things aside, they're going to go under and become a much worse demon, right? So this is at the point where you have lust and anger. That's already become a horrible demon, right? Kama is not a horrible demon. Lust and anger, that grossest form of emptiness and frantically trying to get for your own enjoyment, that's at that point it becomes untenable. So this is the scene we have. So Chandan Munda, we'll continue here. We'll pick up exactly where we left off. After hearing these words of the goddess, the messenger Sugriva, full of anger, went to the king of demons and related them in detail. The demon king became enraged by these words of his messenger and addressed Dhumralochana thus. Now here's another demon, right? Another one of the servants, right? Dhumralochana. Now, sometimes we kind of stretch a little bit trying to come up with meanings of these names. This one you don't have to stretch. Dhumra means smoke. Lochana means eyes. Smoky eyes, you could say, right? So it's a sign of ignorance. And your vision is covered and bewildered. That's Dhumralochana, a very good servant of Shumba and Nishumba, right? One of the first things they confuse you into thinking something different, right? Hey, Dhumralochana. And actually, you can see if Shumba and Nish right now, you can say we're Shumba and Nishumba, right? Who knows who's speaking from our voice, right? And when confronted with a difficult spiritual problem, where like the Divine Mother is challenging us, this is what's happening. You know, we think normally we get everything we want, and now what we want is saying, "Come get it," right? She's challenging. It's you're being challenged like that. So what's the response? It's like, well, you know, it's like, well, I'm still in control. You know, all kinds of delusion comes to justify our position. Hey, he's calling ignorance. Hey, Dhumralochana. Right? So that's his first go-to is, rather than seeing what's actually there, if the goddess of the universe is saying, if you want to fight, let's fight. What's the only possible logical response? You win. Right, you know, that's the only possible. You're not going to. Nobody's ever won this fight, right? But he's thinking, no. What? How dare I? Can easily win. I'm on. You know, this is all illusion. This is Dhumralochana. So hey, tell me.
In other words, not challenging him. Mm. It's like reminding him at his deepest core of what the reality is. So he's almost like calling ignorance. Come back.
Yeah. You could interpret it if you go into the very subtle psychological state that this must represent, or this can represent, right? It's an old story. We've been reading it. Some people have been reading it for thousands of years, and trying to pulling these type of things from it. But she calls him on it, right? Because actually, what does he say to Sugriva? He says, either come willingly or be dragged. You have no choice, right? And she says, okay, come drag me. That's her challenge. Right, I'm not coming willingly. I took a vow. Nobody can have me unless they defeat me. Right, so come. If that's your challenge, come get me. Right. So his response: Oh, ignorance! Oh, Dhumralochana! Oh, cloud covered eyes! Right, you go to her and bring her here. Right, just covering the truth. And is still living in his fantasy and projecting his fantasy further, right? Hey, Dhumralochana, go quickly with your army and drag that misbehaved woman, right? I don't have the Sanskrit in front of me. It's that we get the word dushtu from it. This type of dura dushtu. It's like very, very, very bad, badly naughty, misbehaved person. Hey, go. Army and drag that misbehaved girl here by her hair. So this is this, it comes from dusha. It's basically dushtu woman, like dushtu girl, right? That naughty girl or bad. Actually, the term in this term is not. We use it as almost endearing. Oh, that boy is dushtu. He's, you know, like a naughty boy like that. But actually, you may have it there. I don't have the verses. Actually, I have it here. But it means like. Bad. Right? How you now? First, you're thinking, "Oh, she's the most wonderful thing in the world. I should possess her." Yes. Now, ignorance, but that's not working. Yes. So now, ignorance comes. That she's that bad person, not good person, not the jewel amongst women. That misbehave, ugly person, She should drag her here immediately. But who is he calling? The first person he calls, hey, Dumralochan, very significant who he calls. Go quickly with your army and drag that misbehaved girl here by the hair. If anyone tries to defend her, be her a god, a yaksha, or a gandharva, then kill him. The sage continues. Then the demon, Dumralochana, as commanded by Shumba, went forth immediately with his army of 60,000 demons. On seeing the goddess seated on the snow-covered mountains, he yelled, enemy! So immediately, you see, from the jewel amongst women, now it's enemy. Right? So if it's enemy, just leave her be. Right, but he can't leave her, but he wants to possess. But now he wants to be. It's one of those like, if I can't have you, nobody. Was like it's out of rather than first it seems to be devotion, yes. Right? Oh, I love you. You're beautiful. Yes. You should be with me. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes obsession, mm-hmm. Right? That becomes because that the core of it is like I have to possess you no matter good or bad, even if it's my death. It's your death. Tell me.
So it reminds me a little bit of people who pursue the Kundalini Yoga. Mm. And yeah, just want to have it. Mm. And Ma has said you have to come in the right way.
Yes, right? otherwise you have to force her or you have to surrender to her.
That's
right, the thing. And actually this is the problem. A lot of systems of Kundalini Yoga are being devotion. The sages say it's like trying to rape the Divine Mother. Mm-hmm. You're trying to steal her energy. It's not possible. Yeah. We worship her. We don't try to control. We don't make her come up. We actually, all the prayers, even when we do Buddha Shuti and things in Kundalini Yoga, you're opening the way and ask your Ma, if you desire, you come up. Yeah. Right? You know, it's like, and because if you come up and you do what you want, not you come up and do what I want. That's the thing, right? That's an important point. And you see, what's the difference? And there's a Draupadi, right? The Pandava's wife, right? Draupadi, of course, in Mahabharata, her character is there and who she is. But there's a book called The Cult of Draupadi. There is a group of people over the years, since that time, that make the cheese the Divine Mother. Draupadi is the goddess, mm-hmm. Right? And she's seen like that, right? And so you see, when the Pandavas and the Kauravas, they try to enjoy her. They try to strip her cloth away. Right, any amount of cloth couldn't reveal her. Right, we know she prayed to Krishna. That's a different story, but just take it from this perspective. And she's seen as the goddess Kundalini in this one cult of Draupadi, the one group sect of worshipping Draupadi as the Devi. Right, but that same Draupadi in the bed of Yudhisthira, her sari came right off.
Yeah.
Right, he approached her with love.
Yeah.
Right, the other tried to possess her. You can never possess, you can never disrobe her publicly like this. Right? But that same robe never came off, she revealed openly to her husband. So there's a difference, that's the thing, right? If you want to fight me, if that's your approach, then you're bound to fail, right? Then the demon O enemy, go at once to Shumba and Nishumba. If you do not go to my master right now, I will grab you by your hair and drag you there by force. The goddess said, Devu Vacha, you have been sent by the king of demons. As you are extremely powerful and accompanied by this huge mighty army, if you take me away by force, what can I do? Right, same thing. Once again, she was calling Shumba on his challenge. Now ignorance is coming also. Calling the bluff, calling the ignorance. Let's see, since you're all powerful and you have this huge army of 60,000 thing, what can I do? If you take me, you drag me, what can I do? Let's see, once again, it's challenge. See, actually, if you poke at Shumba's claim, it falls apart. If you poke at Dumralochana's claim, it definitely falls apart. It's just smoke.
Yeah.
You know, all you do is, if somebody blows smoke in your eyes, you blow it back and the smoke disappears. It disappears immediately, right? The sage said, upon hearing these words, Dumralochana attacked her. Ambika, and what did she do? What did it take to get rid of? Ambika, merely uttering the sound hum, reduced him to ash. So like this whole thing, all this is one mantra, hum. Just like Shiva reduced Kama, she reduced this smoke to ash. The smoke to reduce the smoke, you could say, you know. He called it, in other words, he called it what it is. Also, the point is, all these things, we say whom, we mentioned this a couple of days ago, you say whom, swaha, you say swaha, it says all the gods are satisfied. You say swadha, all the answers are satisfied. You say whom, armies of demons disappear instantly. Or Shiva says whom, and lust disappears instantly, right? And yet, so when we say these mantras, we don't know the effect. There's much of unseen effect is there. We don't see what's going on in the underworld, in the other part. It's described, one of our friends gave a beautiful description, is like when you do puja, like here we have a kosha kushi and a conch, and you have flowers and a yantra, and you pour this in the yantra, and you chant this mantra. You do this, it doesn't seem like, it seems like you're over, like today we did overly technical puja. What is it? We don't even know what we're doing. We only know the very tip, the sages. Actually, this whole puja is given by Dattatreya to Parshuram, given, passed on this way, right? Kalpa Sutra like that, and passed down. But we're only given a few little details, all we need to know, all we can know with our mind, right? And so this guy, imagine a huge iceberg, right? The very tip, most 90% of the iceberg is underwater. You only see the tip, right? But if you go, even like a tip, and you take a pole and you push the tip, and you move, so you go, oh, see, it was nothing, I just moved a little. You don't know, you moved something, you did a big thing without knowing what you did, right? You know, so with pujas and mantras and sadhanas, it seems like we're doing very little, and it doesn't seem like many, maybe, sometimes it seems like we're doing a lot, to admit this, but it can seem like you're doing a little, and it can seem like nothing's happening, right? We don't see what's happening. Right, like from somebody went to Holy Mother, says, "Oh Ma, when I don't want, say, why aren't you, I'm not doing japa anymore? Why aren't you doing japa?" He says, "Because I can't. When I do japa, my mind doesn't concentrate. The purpose of japa is to still the mind and concentrate." He said, "That's not the purpose of japa, right? You don't know what japa is doing. Just keep doing it, even if you can't concentrate, even if your mind's not still, right? The name is doing many things, right? If you can concentrate, if your mind is still, that's great, right? But you don't know what it's doing. Just do it." Right, that's the point. The sadhanas are doing things we don't understand. So this is hinted at this, right? By the sound of whom, he reduced Dumralochana to ash. In great anger, the army of demons began to shower Ambika, his demons, right, his army, with arrows, spears, and battle axes. Then the carrier of the goddess, the mighty lion, shook his mane in anger and jumped on the army of demons. He killed some demons with his front claws, others he killed with his fangs, and others still by treading upon them with his hind claws. Striking them with his claws, he tore out the hearts of some and severed the heads of others. He cut many arms and heads off, and shaking his mane, he drank the blood from their hearts. Within a moment, the angry lion, the mount of the goddess, destroyed the demon army. So he says, "You're right, you're very powerful in this big army, what am I to do? Go ahead and try." Within a second, one second, Dumralochana is dead, and within another moment, the lion destroys the army. Right, right. Actually, we think this is such a war-filled story, but actually, that whole war took 2 seconds. 1 second to kill Dumralochana, another moment to kill the army. Right, there's not much fighting going on. You just have to draw it out. So, hearing the news of the death of Dumralochana at the hands of the goddess and the destruction of his army by her lion mount, the demon king became furious. Right, the natural response, right? She's the one I love, I should have her. To bring her here by all means. Now it's like, how dare she? Let's kill her. Right? Before I want her, she should come to me out of love. To drag her here by force, to kill her. This is a natural response when this is being poked at, when being brought to a point, when the ego is being shown for what it is. This is a natural response, right? Even in human relationships, we become like this. You know, exactly. You know, exactly. We have stalkers and all kinds of things. It becomes all twisted. You know, love and hate can be very, when it's selfishly motivated, can be very, they're very close emotions. You know. So then he says, his lower lip quivering. He commanded the two mighty demons, Chanda and Munda. Right? First is, "Hey Dumralochana." Now he goes, "Hey Chanda, hey Munda." So imagine, we're constantly going, "Oh Chanda, go away. Oh Munda, go away." But he's calling, "Hey hey Chanda. Oh lust. Oh anger." Right? Go get her. Right? Hey Chanda, hey Muna, take a huge army of demons and bring her here, dragging her by the hair or binding her. If you doubt that you can do this, then let the demons wound her with her your weapons. After wounding her and striking down her lion, bind Ambika and bring her to me quickly. Thus ends the sixth chapter entitled The Slaying of Dhumralochana, found in Devi Mahatmyam with the Markandeya Purana, spoken when Sivarni was Manu. Chapter 7, we'll read two chapters tonight in order to fit the nine nights, the way we're splitting it. This next chapter 7 starts with Dhyan Mantra to Matangi. We meditate upon you, sitting upon a throne of jewels, listening to the sweet sounds of parrots. Your body is dark, your foot rests upon a lotus, and you wear a crescent moon upon your head. Wearing a garland of forest flowers, you play upon the strings of a veena. You are clad in red cloth, O goddess Matangi. You hold in your hands a cup made of conch shell. A slight, sweet, intoxicating fragrance comes from your face, which is decorated with a brilliant vermilion mark. Om, Rishuvacha, the sage continues. At this command of Shumba, the demon army with Chanda and Munda at their head marched ahead in fourfold array. Om Vishnu. In fourfold array, well armed with weapons and armor, they saw the goddess gently smiling, seated upon her lion. This is her response, you know. On the high peak of the great mountain, seeing her, the demons became excited to capture her and made ready with their bows bent and swords drawn. Ambika then became very angry with these enemies, and her face became dark with rage. So this is a new form of Ma, right? From the center of her fierce, frowning forehead suddenly appeared goddess Kali. It is another form of Kali, right? And so actually, so out of her forehead, out of her anger, another of Kali comes. And so people think, oh, Kali is a form of Durga, right? That's people think like this, right? But that's not, actually the text doesn't say like that. And we'll see later, Kali and Durga are the same goddess, right? Actually later she'll be expanded into many goddesses. Right, then when challenged that there's many goddesses, they all absorb. Says, I'm only one here. They're all her. So Kali is one, like Kali and Lalita are not two different goddesses, right? This one holds a sword, the other a sugar cane bow. They're not two different goddesses. And the way we explain this to ourselves and to others is like Kali is worshipped on Amavasya, the dark moon, and Lalita is worshipped on Purnima, and the full moon, the dark moon, are very different, but they're the same moon. Right, but they're very different. So Kali and Kali and Lalita, or Kali and Durga and Saraswati, they're the same goddess, but they're different. Their mood is different. Their approach is different. Their revelation is different. Their work is different, or the same, but according to what you need, right? But they're the same goddess, right? So from Durga, this, or Ambika here, who's riding a lion, comes a very fierce form, because what's the form? That form comes out to kill Chanda and Munda, right? And that, so it's the form of the form of the goddess matches the form of the enemy.
Enemy, yeah.
Right? We'll see. Actually, this is significant how it ends, you know. Frightening to behold, armed with sword and noose, wearing only a tiger skin, a garland of human skulls, and I like this line, carrying a strange skull-top staff. Right, this is an interesting. She holds this, and one time we had it for years here. Eventually, it was outside. We only bring it in during Navaratri for this story, so as a visual aid, right? But now we were at next to Mother's in Costa Mesa. There was a Halloween store, right? And you walk into the Halloween store, and I walk in, it's like, oh my God, a strange skull top staff. This big staff with a big wooden skull on it. It was great. So we had to buy it. It was only $18. We had to buy it, right? Very, very good. We got the head one. But that's like, usually you don't see this weapon in Ma's hands. You see in our traditional form. But here, her weapon, is she has a sword, but a strange skull-top staff. So we see this. There's a lot of kundalini imagery in this. So what's a strange skull-top staff?
Spine.
We're the spine and the skull. Right, this is also her weapon that she's wielding. Right, she's holding our spine. She's holding us by the spine. You know, we're her weapon. Our body is her weapon. Right. Very interesting image. Yeah, her flesh was withered, and her body was made only of skin and bones, giving her a frightening appearance. Right. So we see. We don't see Ma this way. So the people sometimes ask, when you see this, that's if that's Kali, I don't want to worship Kali, right? But you see, but it's like Nrisingadev, right? You look at this fierce form of Nrisingadev ripping apart the Hiranyakashipu. Why would anybody? But you look at the paintings of Prahlad. He's like this, right? He's not seeing that, right? To Hiranyakashipu, Nrisingadev is death, right? To Chanda and Munda, Kali is death, right? To a devotee, Kali is mother. There's a difference, and there's a beautiful mantra that describes just a lion's teeth are death to its prey, but are nurturing to its cubs. Yes. They grab you by the thing, and if a lion were to grab something by the throat, that could be the end of it.
Yeah.
But if it grabs its club, the cub just surrenders.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you pick up even a dog; it's still, the response is there. It can't help it, even because it reminds them how their mom carried it. Right? You can pick up your dog by the scruff of the neck, and just like a cat or a dog. That's the way moms carry it, right? So it's like it immediately surrenders, right? So the same God is seen differently, right? So Chanda and Munda, this divine mother, who's their enemy, appears as enemy. Actually, Krishna says in the Gita, whatever way people approach me, I respond, right? So if you want him as a friend, he becomes your friend. If you want him as your child, he becomes your child. If you want him as your enemy, he's an expert enemy. You want to fight him? He's a great fighter. If you want him, he's a great lover, he's a great fighter. Right, who's a better fighter than Krishna or Vishnu? Yeah. So he can be like, so you want an enemy? Great. You want to fight? Let's fight.
Yeah.
Right. If you want to hug, let's hug. Whatever you respond. Right. So if you want, if this is how you this aggressive stance of Chanda and Munda, of lust and greed. Right. That aggressive, that's your approach to the world. It's mine. If I can't have it, nope. You know that. That type of unrefined lust and anger, not proper kama, not the normal joys of life, not trying to see find union with God. That's not what's here.
Yeah.
This is, I want it, it's mine, and anybody who goes against me is going to die. That's basically Chanda and Munda. It's like that pure thing, right? So for that, the appropriate form of Ma is this form of Kali, very fierce. Her body was made only skin and giving her a fearful appearance. Her immense gaping mouth showed a large lolling tongue. Her eyes were sunken and blood red, and her roars filled all directions. Very, what an image, right? Right. And we'll find her tongue and gaping mouth later in the story, in the next chapter. She attacked and slaughtered the army of demons, the enemies of the gods, and swallowed them whole. This is what she just... swallowed them up. Grabbing elephants with her protectors, drivers, warriors, and bells in one hand, she threw them into her mouth. Likewise, cavalries with their horses, chariots, and the charioteers were put into her mouth and hideously chewed up with her teeth. Some she grabbed by the hair, others by the neck. Some she trampled with her feet, others she crushed with her body. She caught the weapons shot by the demons in her mouth, and her fury crunched them with her teeth. Right? This is interesting. Ma Kali's, in this image, her main weapon is she just grinds things with her teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Kali is also, why Kali is there? Kali is a consort in the normal understanding of Kala. Kali and Kala, right? So Kali represents time. Right? Kala is that which transcends time. Kali represents time. Or sometimes it's seen Kala is time, and Kali is that which destroys time. Both of them are seen, right? But as time, everything is ground. A mountain, actually mountains are ground to dust,
yeah.
Right? So even that's the thing, that's why every demon always asks for immortality,
yeah.
Because they're guaranteed not to last, right? Kali has time. Time, it's, you don't need to do anything to lose your, you don't do anything, time itself will destroy it,
yeah.
Right? Actually, if some desire comes, guaranteed, in a little bit, it could be gone. Right? That's an amazing thing. Time itself destroys it, even if you don't fight it. Right? If you want to fight it, you can just by time you can just be frustrated and have your desires frustrated. Or you can simply just, like Gita says, when any experience, good or bad, has a time limit. It comes, it lives a little while and disappears. And if you just patiently wait, time itself will destroy it. No need to do anything. Right? If you don't like the way things are, wait a day. It'll be different tomorrow. Right? That's generally the thing. So Neem Karoli Baba has a great line. This is how to fight desire. This is the big mystery. How to overcome desire. If you want a cup of tea, don't drink it and the desire will go away. Right? It's like that simple. Right, it's like if you want not to drink tea, just don't drink tea, and eventually the desire will go away.
Yeah.
If you're really agitated by some lust, you want to smoke, you want to drink, you want to do whatever the thing is, right? Wait 15 minutes, and you probably won't want to do that. You know, it's like it passes, right? But on little things it passes, but on big things also. Kali grinds everything as time. What happened? She ate some fiercely and beat others. Some were killed by her sword, and some were her skull top staff. And still others being ground by her teeth. Seeing the army destroyed, the demon Chanda rushed and attacked the awesome Kali. He showered the fierce-eyed goddess with terrible arrows, and the demon Muddha hurled thousands of discs at her. These numerous discs disappeared into her mouth, looking like suns disappearing into clouds. This is very interesting also. It's like, this is very big imagery, like suns disappearing. Right, so it's like even the sun will disappear, will be eaten by time. Suns and galaxies, nothing will survive, right? Actually the only one who survives is he whose mouth absorbs everything, right? These numerous roaring fiercely, her tears gleaming in her terrible mouth, Kali laughed in extreme fury. I like this. She laughed in extreme fury. The goddess riding upon her great lion then seized the demons Chanda and Chanda and severed his head with her sword. Seeing the destruction of Chanda, the demon Munda attacked the goddess. In terrible anger, she killed him with her sword, leaving him lying on the ground. So it didn't take long. She cuts Chanda and then Munda. Right? Lust and anger. When lust is gone, anger has no... Anger is only frustrated desire, right? That's what we understand. Seeing the valiant demons Chanda and Munda destroyed and the remaining army panicked and ran in all directions. Mm-hmm. Kali, holding the severed heads of Chanda and Munda. Now this is a great scene. You know, he picks up the two severed heads and walks. She comes back to Ambika, to Durga, right? Who is also her own form, right? Kali, holding the severed heads of Chandamunda, came before Chandika, her voice filled with loud laughter, and said, I have brought you the heads of Chanda and Munda as animal offerings in the sacrifice of battle. Right? This is the real animal sacrifice. Right? We can right now, tonight itself, who knows how many animals are being sacrificed in this world. Right? A name of worshipping the goddess. Well, to speak of that, how many animals are being sacrificed in the name of worshipping our stomachs?
Yes.
That's actually much more being sacrificed for our desires than the religious purposes. Right? Nobody's upset with that. Everybody's only upset with the animal sacrifices in temples. Right? But even that, but this is the animal sacrifice. It's anger, and actually it's called Pashubali. Right? In the Dhyan, a mental worship that we do in Kali, in the Tafana Tantra, like we do during the puja, right? Where you worship the goddess internally with aspects of your own being. But then, proper Kali puja needs Pashubali. You need an animal. You need an animal, goat sacrifice, and buffalo sacrifice, right? So it says that lust is, you sacrifice lust as the goat, and you sacrifice anger as the buffalo, right? This is the real demons. Killing a buffalo or a demon or a buffalo or a goat probably won't reduce your lust and anger. Maybe make you more lustful and angry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the problem, right? But symbolically, we can understand what this is. The real Pashubali has to be done internally. Lust and anger have to be overcome. Right? So, Kali is the one who destroys that. Right? I have brought you this as offerings, animal offerings, in this battle, sacrifice of battle. That means this struggle, this sacrifice, we do all kinds of, this is sacrifice. This internal struggle to overcome anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, these type of things, that's puja. That's our sacrifice. That's what we're trying to overcome, not just throwing ghee into the fire. We need, this is what we have to overcome, right? Then he says, you yourself will kill the demon brothers, Shumba and Yashumba. So who's she talking to? Right? She's talking to herself. These are two aspects of herself, right? So this is, you see, so two aspects of ourselves, two aspects of herself, right? You yourself. So Kali fought Chanda and Munda. Later she'll fight Raktabija. They're perfectly qualified, right? These are growth things, easy to fight. Not easy, but heck, they can be fought, right? They need that type of power. But Shumba and Nishumba are very deep psychological things. They need something more sattvic, not just brute force of grinding everything and smashing people with clubs, with skull-top staffs, you know? Yeah. You know, it's like, it actually requires, so that, he says, you yourself, this other Ambika, Chandika, who's actually, Ambika and Chandika are the same in the thing. They're used almost simultaneously. Chandika means fierce, but Ambika means mother. Right, Kali is different. That's a different. She's also those, but he says this aspect of Kali, I'm not suited for this type of work. You're suited for this type of work. I'll kill these. Yeah. Right, here you go. Yeah. Right. So then, seeing the heads of the demons Chanda and Munda brought to her, the auspicious Chandika said to Kali, or said to a different aspect of herself, in playful words, because you have brought me both Chanda and Munda, you shall now be known to all the world as Chamunda. Right, and we use that mantra of Chamunditi. You are now known as Chamunda, the killer of Chanda and Munda, which is one of the main Chamundaye Viche. Viche is the sound of cut. Right? Chamundaye Viche. You are the one who cuts. And so when we simply, you are the one that cuts Chanda and Munda, or it's when we do that Navarna mantra, it's mother cut Chanda and Munda. Right, not you who a long time ago in a story that may not have happened, written by somebody we don't know, and it's like, that's not it. Whatever the story, whether it happened or not, whether it's made up, whether it was written today or yesterday or 10,000 years ago, still we can invoke the story. We can invoke her to help overcome these knots, these mistakes, right? These the things that are actually stealing our freedom, stealing our independence. Thus ends the seventh chapter entitled The Slaying of Chanda and Munda. Found the Devi Mahatmya of the Markandeya Purana, spoken when Savarni was Manu. Let me 1 second here. Yeah. Actually, I have a small commentary. It's only a few sentences. When lust and its byproduct anger are purged of self-interest, or what is that? They're not just destroyed, they're decapitated, their heads are cut off. Each demon has a different way of being killed. Chanda and Munda are decapitated, right? Their self-interests are removed. So lust and anger, even lust and anger are not bad. We need lust and we need anger also, right? But they should be for a higher purpose. If it's self, self-interest, then they bloom forth as true desires of the soul. The true desire of the soul, which is for God, with love of God, you know. Desire, selfishly motivated, we call that lust. That same desire, focused on its real source, where it really comes from. The sense of emptiness, what I quoted St. Augustine, our hearts are restless, so they rest in thee. He himself was, have you ever read anybody here read the Confessions? It's not an easy book to read, right? It's the first autobiography ever written, interestingly enough. But he's the whole thing, it's confession, he's talking to God. Right, and it's a little heavy because a lot of people you can trace original sin to that. The doctrine of original sin is found in like that because he's from childhood on he's analyzing every aspect of his being, seeing how sinful he is, and he's confessing everything to God. Right, oh God, but why did he do all these mistakes? Right, at the very end, actually, it's not a book about original sin, it's a bridge about original perfection. There's a one hidden line, the 10th chapter, in this 10th book. That says, but even as a child, he says, he's seen as an infant, I was crying selfishly to see how sinful I am. So, that's true Christian doctrine of original sin, right? Born sinful. Otherwise, you're born selfish. Why wouldn't you be born selfish, right? He says, but why? Because I felt I had the footprint of perfection within me. I had your footprint always in my soul, right? You know, it's like I knew, and therefore my hearts are restless. He says, my hearts are restless. Till they rest in thee. Right? The whole time I'm only all my mistakes that in Christianity we would call it sin. We wouldn't use that same term, such a heavily emotionally motivated term or loaded term. But he says, everything I've done has only been because I wanted you. And I intuited your presence. Mm-hmm. And I wanted the completeness in your presence. Mm-hmm. And I was searching for it. As a child, I was searching for it. As a young adult, he was a playboy, the equivalent of a playboy of the old world. Right, everything he did. Right, he was a drunkard. The famous line, "Oh Lord, give me chastity, but not yet." Right, during his transition, he had a couple great lines in the book. Another great line, he says, "Pecca cum fuerza." He says, "If you're going to sin, sin with gusto." Right, you know, it's like don't do it. Like he says, anything he did because he really did it because he was looking for completion. Right, because he says at the end of his life, he was a great mystic. Right, sometimes we blame him for original sin and this and like that, but actually he was a very great mystic, a very deep mystical experience. But that's so lust and anger, purge of self-interest, bloom forth in their real form, which is desire for God, desire for completion, desire for the very source and essence of our being. Jai Ma, Jai Jagadambe. So tomorrow we'll read chapter 8, The Slaying of Raktabija. We'll get a new, one of my favorite chapters, Raktabija. Jai Ma. Stay tuned.